SBS Radio.
Now the football season is over, the cricket season is about to begin. And there is no other sport across this great nation linked to the Australian identity more than cricket. Although today there is no significant representation of our traditional owners playing at the top level in Australia, did you know that the first ever Australian national sporting team to represent the country in any sport was an all-Aboriginal cricket team? The men were coached and captained by Charles Lawrence, an ex-England cricketer. Australian cricket is now recognising Indigenous players, and more than 150 years later, Cricket Australia is trying to rebuild a connection with its heritage that had been lost. I'm Kerry Lee Harding and this is the NITV podcast.
Oh, when I was growing up, you know, we were told that our great-grandfather was part of the team, and then sort of later on found out also his brother. So our great-grandfather, my dad's grandfather, was James Cousins, and his brother was John Cousins. And James was obviously a cricket player, and he went there, but it was his brother, John, who I think was perhaps the better cricketer, because he seemed to, I think he was a really good batsman and bowler.
You just heard there from Vicky Cousins, Gundi Chamara woman, and the great-granddaughter of James Cousins and John Cousins, who represented Australia in the very first international cricket team to tour to England. And you'll hear more from Vicky coming up very soon.
Tour started... The 1868 tour started a few years before, when the Indigenous cricketers were touring around Australia. In fact, they were invited to play at the MCG on Boxing Day. Such was their you know, the esteem that they were held in. And they were coached by a fellow called Tommy Wills, who was deemed to be a bit of a bad influence on the players. So he eventually was replaced by an English cricketer called Charles Lawrence, and he was the one who thought that there was incredible potential in players going over and challenging the English cricketers. And so in 1868, they were very keen to go over there and do that. But the Board of Protection for the Aboriginal people over here decided that they didn't want the team to leave. They gave all sorts of excuses, including that they didn't think that they would survive the voyage and their lives would be in danger. And so the tour was put off, but the players and the coach decided that wasn't enough, and eventually, in defiance of the authorities, they decided to smuggle themselves out of the country. So in 1868, that's exactly what they did. They packed their gear up, headed down to Queenscliff, smuggled themselves out onto a boat, and for most of the players, who I assume from Western Victoria, who'd never been on a boat, they were sailing around the world for 3 months until they arrived in England. And when they did, they weren't the Indigenous cricketers, they were the Australians, and about to do an incredible tour, 47 matches representing our country, and the first Australian sporting team to ever represent this nation was an all-Indigenous cricket team, which is a pretty sensational thing to consider when you think about the way that cricket and sport in general is celebrated in our country, that they were the first.
You just heard there from Mark Greenwood, author of Boomerang and Bat, the book, who has done extensive research on the first Australian cricket team to represent Australia. And the very first cricket team to tour overseas wore very different uniforms to those of which we see our Australian cricket players wearing today.
Yeah, the uniform was it was fairly flash, actually. In the Harrow Discovery Centre, they have some replicas of the uniform, when the team played in England, in Australia, they were sort of played in normal whites. But when they went to England, they had a very flash costume. So they had white trousers. Then they had a bright red military shirt and a coloured sash that went from one shoulder to the round the shoulders. And some of the players had different colour sashes. So there was dark blue and there was light blue, greens and yellows and all sorts. And on the scorecards for the spectators in England, so that they knew which players were who, the scorecards were in colour. So you knew which player was wearing what sash. They also wore coloured caps as well, with a logo of a silver boomerang and a bat. And so, the spectators would know who was playing, but the cricketers were always a fairly fun, jovial mob, and they decided that they would have a bit of fun with the spectators, so they often swapped their caps' colours and nobody knew who was playing. So they had a little bit of fun, but they were obviously a very flash team when they came out to play in England, and they would have looked outstanding, I think, and perhaps that colour, that choice of costume should have been something that was continued.
When the game was played overseas, it wasn't just all about cricket, as Aboriginal culture was very much featured when matches were played across England.
Charles Lawrence, the coach, realised that when he took the players back to Lake Wallace, where they did a lot of their training, that the players also needed some time off to do what they loved to do, which was hunting and enjoying their culture. And he thought that this would be a good, perhaps an opportunity to also, if the players enjoyed it so much, to let the spectators in England see some of the Indigenous culture. So the players also did an incredible show for spectators in England, which involved spear throwing and boomerang throwing. And even one of the players was incredible with a stock whip. So he used to get spectators to hold a coin in between his thumb and forefinger, and he would take the coin out. And there was another fellow called Dickadick, who was an amazing, very dexterous fellow, and he used to challenge the spectators to throw cricket balls at him. And he would use a shield and a hunting club that some call a liangle. It has different kind of names, but he would use that to deflect the balls, and he would take the money for all the spectators who could never hit him with a cricket ball. So they did lots of cultural shows, and they, as well as their cricket, it was their cricket that was the outstanding what everybody went to see. But at the same time, people, and thousands of people went to see them, at the same time people got to see a little bit of Indigenous culture for the first time in England. And we're talking, over 150 years ago, these were the fellows who took a little bit of culture over there and showed people in England for the very first time what they were about and what, how their culture had evolved. And it was only in a small way, but I think, some people say, well, they were doing a show. I think when you look back, it's hard to know what people were thinking, but the general consensus is that the players themselves wanted to incorporate that into their touring. So I'd like to think that that was the case.
But yeah, absolutely. Like at the halftime or whatever you call it, they would do displays like throwing spears and boomerangs, running backwards, all sorts of kind of athletic showing skills, because of course imagine them deadly warriors and the skills they had with spears and boomerangs and the like, and the shields and things, and the displays they could have done, and the eye hand coordination with just catching cricket balls and throwing them and that kind of thing was really impressive. And I think they also people sort of threw money or that kind of thing as well. So they got kind of like tips or something. But, yeah, those halftime and those displays of culture and prowess and skill and athleticism, like now you see our deadly footballers, how much they've changed the football game, can you imagine like our mobs today, that extra stuff Blackfellas bring to our sport, I often think about that. It's not really that well known story, and I think that awareness is growing though, because I know Cricket Australia have done a fair bit, and I went to an event a couple of years back with some of my cousins and that, up to the Harrow Centre, the Johnny Mullig Centre, and we got to meet one of the young cricket teams that were heading off somewhere, Indigenous cricket teams, and so they're doing a lot more about building the awareness, and I'm not, you know, a mad cricket person. I like one days, but the rest of it's like, I'm not watching that, despite, you know, the family story. I think there's a bit of a way to go maybe in the awareness, in, like there is in the AFL around Marnbrook and stuff, you know, in the origins of footy. You know, I think those stories are getting out there more, obviously, than they were, because this is a really important, obviously this story is important to us and should be an important story to all of Australia, because I think the thing now, you know, we've gone beyond the reconciliation and the, you know, us educating the non-Aboriginal people. I think it's time now, you know, their time is, the onus is on them to learn the stories, because it's our shared story, and there's a lot of these shared stories, some of them good, like the cricket one, some of them, as we know, not good, like the battles and the massacres that happened. But we've all got to come to the knowing that this is a shared story, a shared history.
There is a new initiative by Cricket Australia, and it has started a new online panel series called Cricket Connecting Country.
Did you think it wasn't racism because people told you it wasn't racism?
I guess if you even pulled anyone up on it, it was like, well, can you not take a joke?
I was coach at Yorkshire for a few years when Azeem was there. You know, and when I saw, I left Yorkshire at the end of 2016, and then, you know, obviously a few years later, I see this interview that Azeem gives, and you know, that was quite confronting, quite heartbreaking for me as a coach, because, you know, some of those experiences he was saying happened when I was at the club.
At the end of the day as well, like when these situations happen, it can't just be a situation and then nobody is learning from that. Like, we can't just keep having case study after case study. There has to be some action that's taken.
Yeah, I think that's probably gives you an indication of the type of person Andrew Symons is, really. Thinking of himself last, and he's the one that has, you know, has felt the brunt of this racist remark.
Having to deal with all this stuff, especially in 2020, when my mum, there's photos of my mum when she was 4 years old, at protests in Sydney for the similar things we're fighting for today, it's really, really hard to contemplate, like, why are we still arguing for basic human rights?
And this is it for this episode of the NITV podcast series. Thank you to our guests today, Vicky Cousins, Mark Greenwood, author of Boomerang and Bat. Also, many thanks to Adam Cassidy, the Diversity and Inclusion Manager at Cricket Australia. And you can listen to our other NITV podcasts, Take It Black and Ballin' Out. And you can listen just by going to where you get your podcasts.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.